This next story is about who gets to leave a war-torn country and start fresh in the United States.
After the Vietnam War, people in South Vietnam who had supported the United States' presence and war effort, you know, they were treated like the enemy.
This is Allison Krupnik. She lives in Seattle. In the late 1980s, she was a young, ambitious foreign service worker for the U.S. State Department.
I was certainly idealistic, the way you are when you're in your 20s. I was arrogant, the way some people are. I certainly was in their 20s. And the world, at least for me, the world was a really positive place and change was going to happen. And I really, really wanted to be part of that change.
Then Krupnik was thrown into a complicated and pretty grave situation. She was sent to Ho Chi Minh City to help deal with a humanitarian crisis. More than a decade after the Vietnam War officially ended, huge numbers of Vietnamese were fleeing the country by boat. People were dying at sea, and refugee camps were overwhelmed. As part of what was called the Orderly Departure Program, or ODP, Allison had to interview people to decide who would be allowed to resettle in the U.S. As she explains it, one group of Vietnamese were guaranteed entry, so-called Amerasians, the children of U.S. servicemen and Vietnamese women.
Amerasians, or children of these servicemen, they looked different, they were treated badly. There were plenty of men who were in Vietnam during that time who married these women and raised families with them, brought them to the U.S. and raised families. But there were a lot of Vietnamese women who were left pregnant or with young children, never to hear again from, the fathers of their children. If you were a family that had an Amerasian child, you immediately signaled that you had been cavorting with the enemy. So they were hidden. You know, I think in some cases they were cast out of homes. It's horrible to be an Amerasian. They were called, I think it was children of the dust. So part of the responsibility the United States took was to say, okay, we are going to allow these children of our servicemen or contractors to resettle in the United States, and they are allowed to bring with them their birth mothers, their blood siblings, or, and this is where it got really murky, foster families. So suddenly you have a whole enterprise of people selling their kids to quote unquote foster families who would then have a ticket to resettle. So the hardest part of our job was determining, first of all, if someone who claimed to be an Amerasian really was, and often they had no documentation, no birth certificates, no family registers. And then second, our job, and this was very, very challenging, was to determine whether the people that came to the interview with the Amerasian were actually family members. And to try and uncover the truth, that is really the truth, versus what someone believes they have to do or make the truth in order to be successful. So Amerasians at the time that we were doing these interviews, they were young. You know, they were teens, early 20s, and not necessarily educated or with the maturity to make assessments about, you know, what to do when you're standing in front of a scary official who doesn't speak your language fluently and tell your story. And the interview rooms were really intimidating. There were these stark rooms with metal chairs, and every time somebody got up or sat down in a chair, moved the chair, it made that horrible screechy sound that metal chairs can make. And even though I and my colleagues with the State Department had had Vietnamese language training and were certified to be fluent in Vietnamese, it's a tough language though, you don't get fluent in a year, we were required to have a Vietnamese government interpreter in the room with us. And so you can imagine if you're coming in for an interview and there's a Vietnamese government official there, you know that anything you say is being noted by that Vietnamese government official and you want to be really careful. So they'd come into the room and the first order of business was determining, is this an Amerasian or not? Sometimes it's really obvious. If an African American soldier had a child with a Vietnamese woman, you could usually tell that the child was, you know, not pure race Vietnamese, and it would be easy to make that determination. But sometimes it wasn't easy. People are people. People look different, no matter what race or country they come from, and it can be challenging. So somebody would come into the room, and if it wasn't obvious that they were Amerasian, I would have to dig deep in myself and decide, can I make that call alone or do I want other opinions? And sometimes I wanted other opinions. And so it was pretty common when we weren't sure to get up, take the Amerasian or the person claiming to be an Amerasian with us and go into some of the other interview rooms and ask other people for their opinions. I'm thinking about it now, it just seems horrible and so humiliating, and I'm ashamed to talk about this, but it was a way of getting some kind of validation. So say that I come into your room, you're another interviewer, you're in the middle of interviewing somebody else, and I come walking in with a young person and I say, what do you think? And you stop what you're doing and you look at me and you either say yes or you say no or you say, you know, this person's ears look a little bigger or their hair is a lighter shade or something. You say all this. And sometimes if my gut told me I wanted to approve someone, but I didn't feel like there was quite enough there, I knew who to go to, which interview team members to go to if I wanted them to say yes. And I knew who to go to if I wanted them to say no. I mean, we definitely all had personas, right? And there were some people that were harsher than other people. Two of the guys that I worked with had Vietnamese wives and Amerasian children of their own and had a long experience in Vietnam and were very compassionate people. And then a couple of the Immigration and Naturalization Service guys had been Border Patrol people. So their mindset was really, really different. It was a keep people out, only let the right people in. So totally subjective. So that was the first really difficult part of the work. The second really difficult part of the work was all the people that came with the Amerasian. So trying to figure out, are these really your family members? Or are these people that had the means to buy their way into bringing you into their family and adding you to their register? You know, I mean, it's like anything, right? You look for nuance. And so the kinds of things we would look for were, how did everybody dress? Like, was there a definite distinction between the poverty level of the Amerasian and how everybody else was dressed? If the Amerasian showed up in rags and the foster family was all dressed up, well, that right away says something about how cared for this person is. Did they sit together? Did they interact in the way that a family might interact? You know, warmth and affection, you're trying to pick up those things. Was everyone allowed to speak their story? And so often we'd separate them. So we talk to the Amerasian alone and say, tell me the story of how you came to live with this family. How do they care for you? Those kinds of things. And then interview the family separately and ask them and check and see if the stories match. There was only one time in 4 years of doing this work where an Amerasian actually said to me, this is not my real family. Every other time, even if I didn't believe it was a true family, everybody always insisted, no, we're a real family. I look at my personal balance sheet of the time that I spent working in Vietnam and I try to really, you know, sort of assess, what do I think? During the time that ODP existed, over 630,000 people were resettled via ODP. So that's 630,000 people who did not have to escape by boat. And I feel good about that. One of the things that I find so upsetting in what's happening in our country now and our country's attitude around immigration, our current president's attitude around these things is horrible, because I've seen what's possible and I believe in what's possible. I understand there's a concern about bringing criminals into the country. There's also the public burden aspect of it. You know, the idea that if you open the floodgates and let people come in who are going to need social services, we can't necessarily support that. But I do think that even if you can't always say yes to them, you can treat them with dignity. You know, you can care for mothers and children in a humane way. There is no excuse not to do that. If we lose our humanity, we lose everything.